the primary job that the CEO has is to have the right people in the right spots. I have to tell you that this is something I personally struggled with a lot. And I actually looked to a lot of other more experienced CEOs in my entire journey to help me with this one.
Welcome to the Masterstroke Podcast with Monica Enid and Sejo Pietrzak. Conversations with founders, CEOs, and visionary leaders in technology and beyond.
As your company grows, somebody who got you to that size isn't necessarily the right person to take you to scale to the next size. And when you think about sizes, you think about, you know, depending on what type of company and where it is, I always, you know, look at it and there's certain inflection points at certain sizes of companies.
The people that are the right people in the right spots for different stages of the company kind of change and aren't the same people. And, you know, while humans grow and develop and evolve, no one can grow at the rate that the company is growing, because what you're kind of looking for is somebody who's seen the movie before and somebody who's done it before. At least you need certain people on your team to have seen the movie before and have experienced what you're going to go through so that they bring that wealth of expertise. But one thing I really had a hard time with is I really felt a lot of loyalty to the people who made sacrifices and, worked so hard to get the company to that level. For me, it was a really hard thing. Can you kind of talk about how you thought about that?
Yeah, it's so hard. People who were there when the company was founded and worked so hard, you think about the fact that they don't know what's around the next corner, right? And you're right. You want to have someone who's been there and done that, because oftentimes as you pass those thresholds that we were just mentioning in terms of size, you often have similar challenges. And it's not to say that somebody can't get there. You will be much more successful if you've been there, done that, and you can go and then be at a company who's, you know, and bring that level of expertise and understanding of lessons learned. And, you know, it is challenging every time when the company gets past that certain threshold of size, and going from a startup to every stage and being able to scale. If you don't know what you don't know, it's really hard to manage it. And so, you know, I think that's one of the challenges. And even as you want to reward people, and hopefully you can have some sort of an opportunity to reward them and thank them for where they're at, where they brought you in terms of the company, I think it's really important to also give them the opportunity to be really successful and move on to another organization where they can maybe go in and show, you know, all of what they know and take on a bigger role because they've been able to do it already. And this will be the second time at that sort of, at that scale, if that makes sense.
I think you're hitting on something I kind of finally came to, which was I have to find a way to be incredibly honoring of the job that they did when I know that they are not going to be the person to take it to the next level. My loyalty is not to any one person. My loyalty has to be to the entity. And the entity has Yep. so many constituents. It has employees, it has customers, it has investors, it has the community in which you serve. So I have loyalty to that entity because it's bigger and it's got all these constituents. And I can't have loyalty to any one person per se. It's not that you know the person wasn't right or didn't do a good job. It's that the company is changing and the company is facing different things. It's not really about the person and their contribution. I, to this day, talk to former employees, executives that worked for me and spend decent amounts of energy figuring out what I think the right thing for them and using my network, using my experience to figure out what the next right piece of the journey for them is. And if you can continue to do that and continue to always look for a way to promote them and make them achieve their goals while also achieving business goals, I think that's the key.
I think that's really important too for the employees, which is something that I keep learning over and over again and keep, you know, realizing how important the relationship is. Some people get so upset when they leave a company. Maybe perhaps they weren't ready to leave, or they didn't think that they should be let go. But again, it's the entity needed somebody different. And it's so important to leave with integrity when you're leaving and don't burn any bridges. Even if you disagree with the decision, because you never know when that person that you work with can become a great relationship. You can build that relationship and can be somebody that becomes a mentor to you for the rest of your career, like you're doing for so many of the people that worked with you, and I do with people that worked with me. And then you grow and excel, and you realize, hey, you know, I don't have to stay in any company forever. And there's always an opportunity to be able to take my skills and my capabilities and move to the next one and show, you know, the new company everything I can do and continue to learn myself. And so it's true. You know, as you were talking earlier, Monica, I thought to myself, you know, it's that old saying, it's not personal, it's business. Yeah. But you know, as always, everybody says, it is so true. It is very personal to the individual. And it's very personal, believe it or not, to the manager who's having to make that decision. It's extremely hard. It's something that you stay up nights thinking about and trying to determine, is this the right decision? On the one hand, the person is so great at X, Y, and Z. On the other hand, we need, as we move forward, as I, as CEO, am looking to the next 2 to 3 years, we need A, B, and C. How do you, you know, manage that? But you know, you have to ultimately, at first and foremost, realize that you got to focus on the entity, and it's not personal. That it is business. It's what sometimes has to be done.
Absolutely. So you talked about kind of wanting people who've done that before, know what's around the corner, maybe seen the movie, for lack of a better phrase. How do you balance people who've got that experience, have been there and done that, with people who are kind of aspirational and hungry and really want to achieve the next level, and kind of bringing them into your team? Because I always found that it was helpful to have a little mix of both.
I was just going to say a mix. It's interesting you said that. And by the way, you know, I mean, I would say, you know, even at the organization where I was CEO, we had an executive team member who had been there since the company had 11 people. And that is just somebody who is capable of being able to come all the way into the organization at every stage. It's not to say it can't happen, right? There are people who can make that scale and be able to do that. And then there are people who do better for themselves and for the companies when they're able to be at companies where they can see around the corner. And then as a leader, you want to think about having a great mix of people. And by the way, having that diversity of people is not just in their capabilities or their skill set or their experience or what we're talking about now. I think diversity, when you're bringing on a team or thinking about a team, is in all different aspects. Having that level of diversity where you're looking at thinking about problems a different way, thinking about, you know, not only the experiences in the background, but also the way you're thinking about the solutions and the strategies. And that's partly also who you are as a person and your background and your personality. We would always do these insights, discovery insights, I think is what it's called.
And it's kind of like with the different colors. And yeah, I do remember the big color wheel and having the team, you know, we'd lay out the color wheel and have the team stand on the color wheel where their little sliver was and see that we were kind of, you know, we did it. I think you're bringing a good point. Like, we did it to understand each other and to understand how to work together best. It turns out that having different people of all different kinds was really, really useful. And you knew when you needed somebody who was really diligent and sort of analytical, and, you know, then you knew when you needed somebody who was going to be a driver or, you know, kind of biased to action. How would you engage the team in that way? And it was critical. It was critical to have all those different types of people on the team.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about diversity as you think about your team. How did you build out a very diverse team, and what were some of the key elements to that?
Yeah. I think this is, you know, something I learned along the way it's approved, is I learned that if you do want this diversity, well, I mean, there's so many academic studies now that and industry studies that point to the fact that having, you know, diverse teams really yields better results. We have terrible examples from, you know, consumer products where scanning technology didn't detect different darker skin tones, or airbags deployed and hurt smaller women. You know, it's like, because they didn't have those people on the team. And they would have known those things much earlier. So, I mean, there's one thing about consumer products, but even just about thinking about solutions to problems, having that kind of diverse group is really important. And one thing I learned along the way it's proved was the best way to have diversity of thought is to get people from diverse backgrounds, you know, and that's racial diversity, gender diversity, ethnic diversity, geographic diversity, even how they grew up, cultural diversity. All of that brings a richness to the team when you're looking at problem solving. And so, you know, we put a lot of energy into that. And it absolutely paid off in terms of having a team that was able to perform and be creative about solutions. And even just having people who went to different schools or worked at different companies. I had a situation where I hired a few people who all came from the same company. And they really kind of were caught in the go-to solution that the old company had. And so they kept bringing those solutions. And yeah. I mean, it was great sometimes. Sometimes it was like, wow, you already solved this problem? Wonderful. We'll just do it the way you guys did it. But sometimes that was not the solution. And it was hard because there was sort of a core group of people who had had that experience. And we had to bring in other people and other voices to make sure that there were different things being considered.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important to have that diversity around. And that goes back to that, whether it's the color wheel or whether it's the background and the experiences or whether it's, you know, where they've come from and where they've grown up even.
Yeah.
And how they've grown up. And you know, it's one of the things I found is even as you look for really strong, diverse teams, sometimes you can't find them. Uh-huh. I remember I was looking for one of my chiefs as I was doing one of our searches. And I said to the executive recruiter that we had hired, I would really like to find a woman in this role because I want to have a diverse team. And I interviewed 33 candidates, no joke, for this role. And never once did I get a woman to interview, to come in for the interview. Now, I was in software, which has not historically been as many women, and, you know, also automotive, which has not and is now doing a better and better job, both of those areas, both software and automotive industry, in terms of finding great women. But at the time, I literally went back to the recruiter a number of times and said, you're not sending me anybody to interview that is a woman. And ultimately, I didn't hire a woman. I hired a male. But that's because I didn't have any women to even interview.
Yeah.
And so it's tough sometimes, even when you're specifically looking for those candidates to find, because you're not even given them.
And in that case, I think I remember you telling me that the reason you wanted a woman is because you had an all-male team, right?
I did.
Yeah. And I have had all-male teams before too, and felt like, gosh, I've got to figure out how to diversify this. And I think what I came to is I think it pays off to have diversity. So I'm going to put extra effort into reaching out to the communities whether it's gender diversity or racial diversity or ethnic diversity, like I'm going to do, or LGBTQ communities, like I'm going to reach out to those communities. We, the company, are going to reach out and try to make ourselves present and try to recruit and go to find them. If they're not coming to us, we're going to go there and find them and pull them into this and try to get them to interview. And as long as the interview pool, I mean, once you have the interview pool, if the interview pool is diverse and has multiple women, multiple people of color, multiple people of different sexual orientation, then you can say, okay, now I'm going to hire the best person. As long as the interview pool had that, then I'm going to hire the best person for the job. It's never sacrificing hiring the best person for the job. And it's never saying I won't hire a man. I think it's, or a white man or somebody. It's really saying like, how do I get the pool of candidates to be diverse? Even if that takes extra effort, I know it pays off. And then once I do that, how do I make sure that the team as a whole has diversity? Because, you know, like if you had had an all-woman team, then hiring a woman wouldn't be a diverse thing to do, right? It would be, you can't be diverse as a human. You have to be diverse as a team, right? So you have to look at the team you have and say.
And that goes back to what we started talking about, which is you, even in their backgrounds and their experience level, you want to have a mix.
Yes.
Right? And I think that's really important for every team. And you want to have a mix of A players. And what does an A player mean to me? A mix of A players means they're extremely strong. They may be extremely strong in different ways. They may be extremely strong leaders in different ways. They may be extremely strong in terms of their experiences, but they're still top talent A players. They give their all. They exceed goals. They get results. They come with solutions to challenges. And you can go on and on with the list. And it's not just to have A players on your team, because I think the old saying goes, A talent hires A talent, and then B talent hires C talent, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it again. A players hire A talent and B players hire C talent. Tell me why you think that is.
It's not just what I think. It's what, you know, I think a lot of leaders will say is that, you know, when you're an A player, you are extremely strong. You're at the top of your game. You are confident. You are looking to be with other people and you want to constantly be overachieving, and you do overachieve and you exceed results. So you're looking for the people to be on your team then to who will be exceeding results, and you're looking for people who are confident. And it doesn't mean that they're exactly like you. Again, mm-hmm. they're diverse in different ways, but they're still great talent. And then the theory is, and I've actually seen it happen, if you're a B player, you don't outperform, you don't exceed your goals and results, you often will find that they will bring in C talent because they're perhaps just not caring as much, not driving as much to be able to keep interviewing until you find the best people. They perhaps in some instances also, maybe you are a little bit less confident and a little scared of bringing in an amazing person yep. who's then going to eventually outshine them.
Threatened.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the theory, but I've also seen it happen in practice. And it is, it can start creating the wrong, results for the business. And then it becomes even a bigger challenge. Hiring is such an important thing. You have to take your time in finding the right people. I have found that there are times when I've hired and I've hired the wrong person. It adds so much more. And I think to myself, what could I have done differently? What could I have learned, to have hired differently, and part of it is never rushing the decision, but it's also that cultural aspect. And you talk about that all the time.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think, you know, sometimes people conjure these images of like rock star teams of, you know, a team of amazing human beings. And then the question is, do they work like a team, or are there sometimes divas or people who kind of are cultural? I mean, I think we've all worked with people who are incredibly talented, incredibly smart, but man, toxic to the culture and the sort of no jerk rule. Did you ever employ that jerk rule? And did you ever struggle with a decision to let somebody go for that reason?
Yeah. You know, it's two things. One is that exactly as you mentioned, that they're a great cultural person in the organization and everyone loves them. Social Sally, right? Really brings a lot to the culture and brings everyone happy, but is not a great talent in the sense of doesn't achieve goals, doesn't work as hard. And then what you said, which is they're extremely hard worker, they get results, but they're a toxic cancer to the organization. So you end up seeing both. And in both cases, you know, it's really a tough decision because you're giving up something that's so important to the organization, but you're also having to make that tough decision that they aren't the right fit for the organization. You got to have both when you're trying to build that team. What do you think about that?
No, I agree. I mean, I do have to say I struggled sometimes with people who were incredibly bright, that you worked so hard. Like you said, you hire slowly, you take a lot of care, you do a lot of diligence, and then you find out the person is brilliant and they're exactly qualified. And then you find out that on the team, they are not bringing out the best in the team and the other team members. And so as brilliant as they are, as wonderful as they are as individuals, the team is suffering a deficit because of this person's presence. And I have had a hard time having to deal with this. I admit, you know, you said hire slowly, and I agree with you. Don't rush it. The corollary is that you're supposed to fire more quickly. And I think that's where I've struggled. And I learned a lot along the way about, okay, you got to do that more quickly because you can't tolerate the people who bring other people down. Cause it might seem innocuous or small or like those people should buck up or whatever at first, but over time it compounds and it drags people down and it drags the morale of the team down. And it can paralyze everybody because everybody in any business that you're trying to achieve amazing things and be disruptive and innovative, people are working so hard. And if they've got somebody kind of bringing them down, it becomes unsustainable to work that hard for everyone, yeah. I think.
I think 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, the CEO that I was working for, I remember him saying at one point in time, you can never fire someone too soon.
Yeah. No one feels good when it's not working.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, let me ask you this. So as you think about individuals, both in the hiring as well as when they're there, you've often said something that I thought was really interesting and I'd never heard it before, that you always want to have a culture add, yeah. Not necessarily a culture fit.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that? What does that mean?
Yeah. You want to have a certain culture, but you want to be able to open up the idea that somebody can add something to the culture. Somebody can come in and be a creative new idea that then evolves your culture. I never felt like culture was, people would say, how do you keep the culture as you grow? And I was always somebody who thought, I don't want to just keep the culture as I grow. I don't know why people keep saying that. Like I want to shepherd the culture. I don't want to let it run amok. You said that you spent a lot of time managing and understanding and making sure the culture was correct. Of course, every CEO has to do that. So you want to shepherd the culture, but you don't want to have it be static. Just like anything, new people can evolve the culture in really lovely, positive ways. And I think unless you're open to the idea that you don't want people to just fit in with you, there isn't just a fitting in. There is a, do they bring something to the party? Because the party can be so much more fun with more things at the party. In so many ways.
So true. So you could be a culture add, and the culture add is someone who can come in and bring a diversity of thought, a different way to look at things, and you know, maybe open eyes for everyone else around, and maybe find new ways to solve problems compared to what had always been done. Maybe ask the question of why do we do this, or how do we do this? So it's and they're being themselves, and hopefully the organization is one that will welcome that diversity and welcome the changes, and that's what you want to build.
I think you just said the critical thing. When people feel like they can be themselves and bring themselves to work wholly, they can do their best work. Everyone does their best work when they feel like they can be authentically themselves. And seeing other people affect the culture, add to the culture, change the culture, makes everyone else think, oh, I don't have to fit to a mold. I don't have to, there's no mold that I have to fit in and try to artificially, you know, change myself to be that person. I can actually be that. So it has that positive effect on everybody around on the team.
I remember when I was at a meeting and someone said that they used to work at IBM, and it was, and this is probably for the generations below you and I, Monica, there, it's hard to even imagine, but it was always, yes, you can wear any color shirt you want at IBM as long as it was IBM blue, right? Yes. Yeah. Have you heard that before?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I thought to myself as you were talking just now about being yourself, boy, that really changes if you can't even be yourself in how you want to dress. I mean, that's why obviously things have changed since then, but you can imagine what it was like back then. And I'm so thankful, and we're lucky to be working and be leaders in a generation that's different than that one.
Agreed. We are very, I'm very grateful. I agree. Well, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I really learned a lot, and always as usual, and enjoyed it.
And same here. Thanks, Monica. And thanks to our executive producer, Georgiana Moreland.
Thank you for joining us. Please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We would love to hear from you on our LinkedIn page at Masterstroke Podcast with Monica Enid and Sejal Pietrzak.